The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
It is Niels, not Niles. Where's he from? Denmark or somewhere? I've decided this morning I should try and find a short biography. Oh, thank you. And I apparently said Samuel L. Johnson, not Samuel L. Jackson. Thank you. It's good to be corrected. Well, it's not so good to be corrected, but it's good to be right. You mentioned how the disciples left other works. I believe one or two of them left their wives. How do you think of that? What do you think of that? There's a sense in which, unlike when you work on a farm, many people in all sorts of works leave their wives, sometimes for a day. If you're a nomadic herder, sometimes for weeks or months. And Jesus does call people to leave their... We know that Peter had a wife because he had a mother-in-law. You've at least got to get the positive before you get the negative. So he's got a wife, and because we know that the mother-in-law was healed by Jesus, for which some people suggest Peter never forgave Jesus. We're not sure about that. Look, it is very clear that Jesus thinks that there are times when it's right to leave families. We see it at war. There are times when emergencies come and family relationships are stressed and strained. We do know from what Paul writes that some of the apostles traveled with their wives. So it doesn't seem as if that they were permanently separated from. But there was a period when they were with Jesus, where they were moving about and often coming back to the villages. But we do know that Jesus says that we do need to love him more than and be willing to leave. So it's part of the extreme nature of the call of the kingdom of God upon our lives. One of my friends has recently raised with me the problem. I was saying how as a human being, I prefer the Buddha to Muhammad. And he said to me, I won't use the word he used, to describe the Buddha, not in a very complimentary way. I said, mate, you can't talk about Buddha like that. He said, he left his wife and children to go and seek spiritual enlightenment, and then it's quite clear he never went back to them. He said, Ian, if I said to you, I'm seeking spiritual enlightenment, I'm going to leave my wife and family behind, what would you say to me? He said, you'd say you are the word that he used of the Buddha, which I'm not going to say, right? But it is interesting, the questions of leaving things behind. Some of my heroes left wives and children behind for a couple of years to start works in Africa and then came back. But it's interesting. Confusion, doubt, skepticism, what's the difference? Confusion, I think, is when you see something, a fact, that doesn't make sense. In good science, scientists are pleased when they find a fact that's confusing. Now, they're not really, in fact, because humans are like, scientists are like all of us. We like to hold our systems together. But in the best of scientific study, when they receive a bit of data that doesn't fit, they're supposed to get excited because it indicates maybe our theories aren't quite right and here's a chance to get it better. So confusion is where you've got one set of beliefs that you believe to be true and something else comes in that you also have reason to believe is true and you can't bring them together. I think that's what confusion is. Doubt, skepticism, as I understand it, skepticism is where you take the view that you need to be persuaded of something. I was chatting with someone yesterday who was talking about some of the claims of healing that go on in some churches. Now, I have myself seen some before and afters of people who've been remarkably healed in a way that medicine simply makes very little sense of. They say, well, you're lucky, aren't you? One of my friends, I won't bore you with it. So I think it happens, but I'm also very skeptical. I think it's there's a lot of silly claims made about healings and miracles. And I think it's right to be skeptical, to say, give me good reason to believe that claim. And I think if you have the view the Bible has about the sinfulness of human beings, I think it's good to be skeptical. I think most of us engage in selective skepticism. So we tend to be doubtful of things that challenge our belief and very easily accepting of ideas that really we should go, seriously? So I think skepticism is the willingness to say, I need some good evidence for that. And doubt, I think, is doubt's a number of things. But doubt is like John the Baptist has doubt. It's quite beautiful, really. He proclaims that Jesus is the Messiah, the one coming. He has certain expectations of what will happen when the Messiah comes, exactly as all the disciples did, that the Messiah will beat up the bad guys. And he does, but Jesus is going for a higher level bad guy than the disciples are. John finishes up in prison, and from there he sends a message through his disciples to Jesus. Are you the one who is to come, or should we wait for another? Because I think he's saying, I thought Jesus was the Messiah, but surely I shouldn't be in prison, you know, if he's the Messiah. Interesting what Jesus does when John expresses his doubt, that is, he's no longer sure. He gets the disciples of John to sit there with him while he does a series of miracles. And then he says, go back and tell John what you've seen. And then he quotes from Isaiah about the coming one. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the prisoners are set free. And then after the messengers have gone back to John, Jesus has a conversation in Matthew 11 about John, who's just expressed public doubt in Jesus, where Jesus says he's the greatest man born of woman. I think it's wonderful because John expresses his doubt. That he does it honestly by sending someone to get answers. He gets the evidence needed. And then, having had his credibility questioned by a key witness, Jesus then says he's one of the greatest men ever. And I think what it says to us with doubt is, doubt is something that which God is quite happy to deal with, if we deal with it honestly, rather than being ashamed of it. I think we should do as the disciples did. When Jesus says, one of you will betray me, Peter asks John to ask Jesus who, because John's right next to Jesus. And I think that's the way to deal with our fears and doubts, is to go back to the source. And so I think doubt is the sort of a legitimate and unavoidable place for thinking people to live with. Otherwise believe because of the works themselves. What does this mean? I think Jesus, when he says this in John 14 and elsewhere, he's saying, look, there's a number of reasons why you should believe. One of them is simply saying, look at what I've done. At that point, Jesus is, I think, is that an empiricist? He's saying, look at the evidence. It's what he says to Thomas. Touch me. If that's what you need to believe, he's completely unafraid to say, look at what's before you. And that is sufficient reason to believe that he is, in fact, the Son of God. There's some other questions here I haven't looked at, but I can see time is beating us. Thank you. Next week, it will be more peaceful.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.